हरि ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
To the bottom of 124. Verses 1 to 18, Sri Krishna's festive birth ceremony. Sukadeva Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous, and when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Thereafter, bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited Brahmins who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified Brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. He also arranged for worship of the demigods and forefathers. Srila Prabhupada comments. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 1 to 2 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Because we see is here, now this arrangement has happened with Krishna, and then what's his reaction, right? Jubilation. So that's the whole thing, is this is based on his love for Krishna. That's what then puts it in this section. Because in the material world, then we're trying to avoid being jubilant in a nice situation or lamenting if there's a problem. Right? Because these aren't the things that actually give that strong emotion to the soul. Right? These are the material world actually is not something that the soul can really relate to very nicely. Right? But the soul, of course, tries to because they think they're going to get something from it. But then what's the prayojana of that? Right? Then it's lust. So this we see the same thing, but in the opposite, connected with Krishna, in that full affection, that love. So that's the what we're trying to get to, is that natural, spontaneous affection for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So because based on that, that's then why he's arranging all these nice things. He wants things to be auspicious and nice for his son. So he arranges for the Brahmins and all that. He doesn't say, hey, we're devotees, we don't follow the rules. We don't see him doing that. Right? Because it's based on the prayojana aspect, not on I'm not that, my identity is different. Right? So it's not based on I'm a devotee and that's all there is. It's based on love for Krishna. Right? Naturally you're a devotee. So that we see that emphasis is there on that love for Krishna rather than on my situation, who I am and what I have to do. Right? So because of that affection, then he's naturally doing all these nice things for Krishna. But these rules, doing all these nice things because you think the auspiciousness is the main thing, that's a mistake. The actual thing is the love for Krishna. And then to support that, then you try to make nice arrangements. But it's not that the nice arrangements are actually the thing that makes it wonderful. The love for Krishna makes it wonderful. Does that make sense? You know, it's like if I went out and found myself a nice rock, wiped it off really nicely, right? You know, cleaned it really good. You know, squeaky clean and that. And used some nice antibacterial and everything like that, so it's really good. And then after that, got myself some nice, you know, powdered sugar, some butter, you know, some other, you know, essences and a few, you know, fruits and stuff like that and made myself a frosting and then put that frosting on the rock. So is there any benefit? That's the point. So all these nice things that we consider the benefit, they're only a benefit if they're connected to Krishna. That's the real thing. But we think, oh, it's the frosting. And like kids, they just want to eat the frosting. Couldn't care less about the cake. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that the materialist thinks that it's all these little things. That's the real thing. But actually, no, it's a love for Krishna. That's the real thing. That's actually what we're trying to get to. Right?
So, particularly, how is it possible to reach that stage?
By association. By understanding that it's valuable to... Because nowadays we desire so many other things.
Yes.
But when we see that, no, this is what we want, then we'll see it, we progress very nicely.
It depends on our desire and association.
Desire and association. So good association generates that desire. So if we always keep good association, we always have that desire. Like Kamsa, you see, he was behaving actually quite nicely there at the end with proper realization, and he was sincere. But by bad association, he gave that up. So that's the whole thing, is association. So, yeah.
At our stage, when we are not on the stage of love for Krishna, then making all these arrangements for Krishna, it's a part of duty then.
It's a part of the natural, spontaneous expression of their affection.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of duty. It means what they do, that's the duties.
What I do, because... Like, let's say you want to celebrate a festival for Krishna, Janmashtami or whatever.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, I'm confused here. Are you talking about Nanda Baba or are you talking about yourself?
No, you're talking about devotees in
general. Oh, okay. Yes, then we would be doing this because this is the duty, because this is what the great personalities do. This is what's recommended.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing that, then we're following in their footsteps. We don't try to imitate, right? And then because of that, then we start to get that benefit. So that's the whole thing. The duties here are what they do there. We're not being asked to do things they don't do there. Right? Unless it's something that only applies to certain temporary things. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, they may not get a cold or something, so they don't have to take medicine. But the principle of that, there's certain bodily symptoms that are there, therefore there's medicines to take. That's there in the spiritual world. But those are all symptoms of ecstasy and love of God. So when they become too extreme, then they give medicines.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So they can still function.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has discussed the significance of the words Nandastu. Although Krishna appeared as the son of Devaki, Devaki and Vasudev did not enjoy the Jatakarma, the festival, the birth ceremony, right? Because Jatakarma is the first one at the birth. That's the actual birth ceremony. Instead, this ceremony is enjoyed by Nanda Maharaj, as stated here. Nandas Tvatmaja Utpane Jata Lado Maha Manaha. When Nanda Maharaj met Vasudev, Vasudev could not disclose, "Your son Krishna is actually my son. You are his father in a different way, spiritually." Because of fear of Kamsa, Vasudev could not observe the festival for Krishna's birth. Nanda Maharaj, however, took full advantage of this opportunity. Right? So he could only perform the ceremonies for his daughter. Right? He could not do them for his son. Right? Otherwise, then they'd kind of wonder, wait a minute. Yeah.
So this festival even the same day of the birth?
Yes, it's only done at the time of the birth. Or you can do the bigger thing the next day. The small ritual and all that is there, but this is the extended form of it. Right? So in other words, when the child's born, there's some mantras and that are done right at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing of doing auspicious things, distributing charity and prasad and doing nice things, that's the next day. That's why you see it's the day after is Nandotsava or Jagannath Misrotsava, like this.
like that.
Unless it's something you've maybe early in the morning, then you can do something in the day. But because there, they appeared, you know, at midnight, then you would naturally do the next day, because it has to be done during the, that's the time you do these things, is the daytime. The Jatakarma ceremony can take place when the umbilical cord connecting the child and the placenta is cut. However, since Krishna was brought by Vasudeva to the house of Nandamars, where was the chance for this to happen? In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur desires to prove with evidence from many shastras that Krishna actually took birth as the son of Jashoda after the birth of Yogamaya. Before the birth, okay. Before, where did after come from?
What did you say?
I said after, but I'm trying to see where would I have gotten the word. There's nothing around with A's to pull from. Okay. Took birth as the son of Jashoda before the birth of Yogamaya, who is therefore described as the Lord's younger sister. Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, and even though it is possible that this was not done, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, such events are regarded as factual. Krishna appeared as Varahadev from the nostril of Brahma, and therefore Brahma is described as the father of Varahadev. Also significant are the words Karayam Asha Vidivat, being overwhelmed with jubilation over the birth of his son. Nandamaraj did not see whether the cord was cut or not. Thus he performed the ceremony very gorgeously. According to the opinion of some authorities, Krishna was actually born as the son of Jashoda. In any case, without regard for material understandings, right? Because that's the whole point. No, but what about, that's just probably just saying, without any regard for that stuff, about how we in our concept of trying to work out time and space and all these different things like that, without that regard, then we're dealing with actually just the ecstatic, devotion that these residents of Braja have, and here specifically, then focusing on Nandababa. We can accept that Nandamaraj's celebration for the ceremony of Krishna's birth was proper. This ceremony is therefore well known everywhere as Nandotsava. So it happened the next day. So whether the umbilical cord was cut or not, it doesn't actually matter. You just take it that that was done. Like that. How it was arranged, how all these things happened, that we're not sure, but it's whatever is. The point is that it goes on. So if we get stuck on this and that, then that the point is we're missing the point. As we, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points this out, as a prayojana. But what are our arguments? Our arguments are all sambandha stuff. So it means that we're not actually appreciating what the verse is describing. Is that what I'm saying? So this is also, then we have to at one point start to understand that prayojana is the main thing. And then we start to adjust to that. But if we say as no, but unless it makes sense, how can I have faith? Then we're saying that faith or bhakti depends upon karma and jnana, which it doesn't. Right? It's because so many people, you explain logical things to them, are they devotees? If that was the case, basically all nuclear physicists of the planet would be devotees, and very advanced devotees, because they're so logical. Right? Great lawyers, other people like that, they would all be fabulous devotees. Is any even one of them a devotee? No. They're the ones most famous for not being. Why? Because bhakti does not come from all this logic. Point is explanation of devotional service, the logical aspect can be appeased because it can be logically presented. But the point is that actually what we're looking for? Or is it just doubts? Right? Because if we look over on the other side, let's say Vedanta Sutra, how popular was that? Right? So that means we're not actually interested in the logical presentation. We're just interested in what is our doubt that makes or breaks devotional service. So we say science, we say logic, but we're only using those from the pranamoic platform of when it suits us, we use it. When it doesn't suit us, we don't use it. It's just like Have you ever seen a situation where the whole community knows certain things and they know that's the way it is and how it's going to go down? And then there's the young boy and young girl that are totally infatuated and couldn't care less. No, you don't understand. You don't this. It's all different. You know, you guys are too old or too archaic or too this or too that, or, you know, a whole lot of twos going on here. Right? And then they do all the thing. Everybody, you know, what can you do? And then a short time later, it all falls apart. And then they kind of go, well, maybe they've had something there. That's if their false ego is not so big. Otherwise, they'll blame everybody else for why it didn't work. Or, why didn't you tell us? Why didn't you this? Why did you let it happen? You know, I did all this nonsense. Why did you let me do it? It's kind of like, didn't everybody tell you not to do it and you wouldn't follow? And so then, you know what I'm saying? So, bottom line is we have to understand is that these verses here, we're going to see a lot more of them. Right? Because up to now, we noticed in going through the nine cantos, we haven't hit a Prayojana verse. This is our first Prayojana verse. Right? Sambandha, Abhideya, these ones have been covered very nicely. But Prayojana, this is the first verse we've had. So as soon as Krishna's appeared, and now we have this ecstatic emotion. Now it's Prayojana, not before Vasudeva and Devaki. That was all prayers like everybody else did. Yes. Explaining his greatness and all that. Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that we have to be at a certain level to accept that explanation by Srila Prabhupada?
Yes, that's why you have nine cantos to get there.
Because majority of people, they are just interested in some or other material explanation and material details.
And how does that work out for them? How has it improved the quality of their devotional service? Nothing. Because if you demand that without a logic that it's there, then where's the faith? Because as I pointed out, people have faith in all kinds of mundane stuff with no logic at all. Like, people can't function without their phones, their smartphones. But there's tons of people that tell you that, you know, it's going to kill you. You know, or people in their credit cards. And there's people who just know, you just don't use them. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. Oh, we have to have this and the cars and living in the cities. We can get so much done. You know, but then living in the city, what is it all about? If you're an upbeat, trendy person living in the city, what are you doing? You're doing yoga, you're eating, you know, some kind of natural thing, you're on some kind of natural health thing, you're going to this and that. But if you just lived out in the country, you wouldn't need any of that. You understand? So it has nothing to do with actually having faith in Krishna consciousness. Because there's faith in tons of things that absolutely don't make sense. Because it's just they want. What is it? They desire. So all we're trying to do is change our desire from desiring the mundane to desiring Krishna. That's all we're doing. Of course, there's a whole lot of, rigmarole to go through to get to that point. Well, but that's all we have to do.
Was that type of people? Those people.
Yes, you stick to Bhagavad Gita, first six chapters.
So there's no point in trying to explain.
No, you just, therefore you go through Krishna book.
Yes.
Because there it's been nicely explained, it fits into the story, it's pleasant, it's stories, people like stories. You know, it goes through, you know, as you remember in... yes. As I said, so that's the thing, is you choose your audience according to that. It means in here, then you don't necessarily have to. We know that this because Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned it. Otherwise, as we saw before, we just talked about, okay, even these great devotees, they follow all the auspicious rituals and follow the practice, the culture. The people will, you know, it's on a level that they can, may not like, they'll argue with, but it is something that they could accept if they, you know, you work on it long enough. But these other aspects, then it's not brought out. Because the basic thing is, do they even value jata karma? You know what I'm saying? Their own children are born, do they do jata karma? If they do, then okay, then you can get into the thing that, of course, there's going to be an element there, but how it's done, it's not so necessary, since Krishna technically appears from the heart. right? Because they have that affection, therefore that form of Krishna appears. That's why when we say Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Baba, who appeared? Krishna in the mood of Braja Krishna. Because Dwarka Krishna appeared as the son of Vasudeva Deva. That we know as a fact. And this one then is a hidden fact, because the point is this, because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, so that means Braja Krishna is there, so he took his birth at the same time. They both appear at the same time. Then after that, Yoga Maya, because there was time after he offered prayers and all that, then he walked to Gokul, exchanged the children, then walked back. You know, so there's plenty of time for all this to go on, if one's worried about time. How you say the time-space continuum, you know, like that. And butterflies flapping and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah. So yes. So that's the thing, is that you just speak according to your audience. Because here, then, devotees have been through all these things, then you can speak at this level. But if there's this brand new audience, then this may not come up. And, you know, how we're going through many pages, we'd be stuck on the same page arguing for days. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It means that the Bhagavatam class goes through one verse at a time. It goes all the way through the whole Bhagavatam. But if you're going to choose a verse for giving classes, when Prabhupada choose, generally you see Kunti, prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, you know, these kind of ones, or Dhruva Maharaj, these are the ones he would choose from the Bhagavatam to speak on.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Can we say that in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is speaking to different level of audience?
He's speaking to a level of audience that already read the first nine cantos.
Yes. But even can we say that he said according to the opinion of some authority? So after it depends...
No. But it's also how you use the language. Because you don't need to get into the thing, because then, but then do they know what they're talking about? Because in here, if someone doesn't have faith, yes, you don't want to mention the authority, because then you'll go after that authority also. So it's not being some authority is this or that, that it's a speculative thing. It's just, it's a matter of etiquette. Because he's already mentioned that Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, then he went to great detail to explain how Krishna appeared. Right? So therefore he's one of the some authorities. Right? And where would Vishwanath get it from? Because Vishwanath is coming in the line, so that means it must be accepted by previous to him. Right? So they may have mentioned it, then he goes to the detail of proving it. But if they've already established it, he doesn't need to. If they haven't only referred, and there may be a doubt, so there's an advantage to explain it, then the acharyas after will explain more. You know? Does that make sense? You know, Sridhar Swami will make a point. Then others will explain and broaden that so that it makes it accessible to us. So like that, then like this, then the acharyas are writing their commentaries. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Jiva Goswami mentions,
so that means then Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur then establishes how Jiva Goswami is not wrong. Mm-hmm. Like that. And so therefore you use some authorities. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's an etiquette. You'll just see it's how they explain. Because you don't want to get people to get distracted. Mm-hmm. See, that's the principle that's there in the Krishna Sandarbha. Is somebody's getting distracted by these secondary points. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't match their particular taste and conditioning. So, you know, that people are big, that they fly in the air, that they live for 10,000 years or 100,000, they're just totally flipped out about that. But that's not the point that Bhagavatam is making. The point is about devotion. Because as we know, is what's the point of a long life or so much wealth or so many things, mystic cities, if it's not engaged in the Lord's service? So it's about talking about Krishna. So then he mentioned so various ways that you can just distract them, that you've satisfied their doubt or their interest without compromising the philosophy. But to understand the point, you would need to actually be more mature in the philosophy and in devotional practice. So the words they use can be taken on a lower level. Mm-hmm. Like that, like Prabhupada, how he writes like that. Mm-hmm. So then when he writes, those who are new will see something in the sentence. Someone else will see other things in the sentence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It just depends what's there. Is that, you know, yeah, so it's just like, let's say there's a very delicate point, social point, and you have to address it to kind of a general group. You don't get into specifics, you allude to the things, but you're saying it in such a way that what you're saying makes sense, but doesn't necessarily give details. Mm-hmm. But those who understand know what the details are. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Sorry. Yes. Is that? But you avoid any buzzwords. Does that make sense? So that takes a real. You have to be very intelligent to be able to do that. So sometimes it's thought, well, Prabhupada's purports are just simple, they don't give so much detail. Mm-hmm. He gives all the detail. It's just that he uses words that allude to it, where someone's not qualified. And someone who is qualified knows what you're talking about. Does that make sense?
Everyone can take benefit.
Yes, everyone can get the benefit. Is that make sense? That's the whole point. Does it make sense?
No, it is.
Everyone can get benefit.
Yes. Yes. Then everyone gets the benefit. Yeah, you speak loudly. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Everybody gets on their level, but by one explanation, everybody can gain from it what they want. That's the whole. We see, like with Prithu Mars and the Earth. All the different living entities in the universe could get their benefit from the Earth. But what they wanted was different. But it's still the same Earth. So there's still the same point that Prabhupada makes. Everybody can get what they're looking for. Even those who want to make trouble and not have faith, they can get what they're looking for. So listen. That's the thing. That's what we're dealing with, is we're dealing with another realm. Right? Because it's like the gopis. Are they going to be talking about anything else than Krishna? No. Are they going to be talking about anything else than their particular relationships with Krishna? Means the conjugal, parakeet conjugal relationship. Right? Do any of them formally have such a relationship with Krishna? No, not one of them. So all these gopis are at Nanda Baba's house assisting Mother Jashoda. So what are they going to talk about? But they're going to talk in such a way that Mother Jashoda just thinks everything's just normal. And at the same time, as the other gopis have an idea, but at the same time, you don't want to reveal anything too much because there are rival gopis. You understand? So that's what we're dealing with. So it's a standard thing. Right. It goes on here. We do it all the time. People talk gossip. They don't use... You know what I'm saying? But just like, let's say, it's mixed company. Right? If men are cultured, they'll be careful what they say. Women will always be careful what they say. If it's mixed. If it's only women, you know, the men, it probably sins their ears off. They think the men can be gross and everything. No, women can be way, way more. But they're just being factual. So it's not gross to them. It's just, you're just getting into detail for experiencing the taste. Yeah? That's so funny. I'm just saying the different reactions. Yeah, there's this guy who, yeah, yeah. He's going, Yeah, kind of. Okay. Yeah, that's the thing. Is that that's why women don't appreciate men being gross, because they're not actually gross. It's just uncultured. Okay. Okay, so we can see, because starting from here, now we're getting into the Vrindavan Leela. Up to this point, it hasn't been Vrindavan Leela. Right? It may be referred to here and there in the Bhagavatam, but this is the first time now we're actually dealing and seeing the Brajbasis and how they act in their natural environment. So we can see already there's a different flavor. And that's why the other nine cantos are there, to clear all these things. So we're comfortable to just deal with, you know, these aspects of just how they're expressing their love for Krishna and the variety of that. Because otherwise, if we're still arguing over little points, you know, here Veda called, why do we need to do that? They're Brajbasis. Then, you know, go back to, you know, Bhagavad Gita. You know. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah.
Now you are supposed to test now.
Yeah, so that's the point, is that this is the element of tasting. But tasting means the heart's pure, so we can appreciate it. that's the idea. Yeah? Yes. You know, but the acharyas will explain as we go, so we can appreciate it. So it's not. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Nandamars gave 2 million cows, completely decorated with cloth and jewels, in charity to the Brahmins. Right? Probably in the Krishna book it just says tens of thousands. Right? You know, just so we don't freak out. He also gave them 7 hills of grain. Right? So he's not talking about, you know, get out your binoculars and 7 hills. He's talking about big piles of grain. You know, you can see sometimes in the Sometimes in the West, they're doing, they're piling up the grains for you know, after they've harvested, huge piles. So like that, because if you give away 2 million cows, you can understand the 7 piles of grains are big, and not little piles. You know, it's like we were saying, just in a contemporary time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for Govardhan Puja, we mentioned in the temple room, there'd be 10-foot high piles of prasad. They just put down, you know, these date leaf mats on the floor, like that, and then pile it up. So one pile was a pile of rice, 10 feet high. That's not that you're sitting there and if anybody touches it, it'll fall down. It's comfortably sitting there at 10 feet high. Right? So that means how big is the base? Right? All around. So there's one of those in the temple room. Right? Of rice. There's one of those of puris. There's one of those of halava. I can't remember the last one. I think it was pakoras. Right? So that's what he was distributing at Govardhan Puja. Right? Because the gentlemen of Calcutta there, and Bengalis are quite cultured, then afterwards, after it was offered, because it was offered like that, you know, because the deities are there, and in front of the deities in the temple room, then these are there. Then all the gentlemen had their tiffins and take some home for how much, you know, they and their family could eat, and then they all went home. So they didn't eat there, because otherwise there's so many of them. How do you distribute all that there? You know, and then those who sat there, then they would eat and stuff like that, you know. So that's in a contemporary. Oh, one was Sandesh. One was Sandesh, yeah. So big pile like that. So Nanda Baba, then seven hills. He didn't, you know, because that we're saying that's a pile. So a hill is a bit bigger. Okay. Gave them 7 hills of grains covered with jewels and with cloth decorated with golden embroidery. Right. So then you covered it with cloth so it doesn't blow away and all that. And it's all got cloth with jewels and golden embroidery. So it's good stuff. In other words, that sari that you'd really love to buy, but you're not going to because you don't have that kind of money, that's what he covered the hills of grains with and just gave them away. And a hill of grain takes a lot of those to cover it.
No cows.
Hmm?
Cows.
Oh, okay. No, but he also gave them seven hills of grains covered with jewels and with cloth decorated with golden embroidery. Mm-hmm. So both are there. So the cows are decorated with cloth and jewels, mm-hmm. and the grain is decorated with cloth and jewels. Yeah, but still, 2 million cows, that nice cloth, the jewels, and that, you know, it's, you know, and at some point, I'm not sure if it'll be here, but there, that, just by farming, they would be that rich. So it's only now the earth doesn't give that kind of supplies because people aren't pious enough. But otherwise, they give so much that there'd be so much wealth, you know. So, yeah. O King, by the passing of time, land and other material possessions are purified. By bathing, the body is purified. And by being cleansed, unclean things are purified. Right? By purificatory ceremonies, birth is purified. By austerity, the senses are purified. And by worship and charity offered to the Brahmins, material possessions are purified. Right? So in other words, we have possessions, but by worship of the Brahmins and charity of the Brahmins, then our own possessions become purified. So this is all the different ways things become purified. Right? With time, land and other material possessions are purified. Certain things, it's just time. Right? Like that. Body, by bathing, okay.
What is blue? Land being purified?
By time. Just like, let's say, something is impure on the land. Just by time, it'll become purified. There's impure things there, by the sun, just by sitting, you know, this and that, you know, everything. Like if you throw a bunch of garbage on the land, then it just with time it turns into compost, and then it's pure again. Okay.
Human beings would disappear. The earth and natural things, like the ants, the beings, everything. The earth would be completely natural without everything. Some thousand years.
Yes. Yeah, it would just be purified. But the only problem is still nobody be God conscious. So that's the whole point of the humans, is that since the whole purpose of the universe is being God conscious, you want the humans. So you know, don't make any plans to get rid of them all. Okay, by purificatory ceremonies, birth is purified. Because one is born, but with the being born, then there's all the impurities that the child has themselves and what they inherited from the parents. Right? So you get all the money at the end of the life and you get all the bad qualities at the beginning of your life. Yeah. So by these purificatory ceremonies, so Jata Karma is the first one. That impurifies the intelligence, because Jata means intelligence. Right? By satisfaction, the mind is purified. Right? So if the mind's bothering you, just by being satisfied, then the mind will be pure. And by self-realization of Krishna consciousness, the soul is purified. So if you're going for that, then all the other things you can work back to. They're natural. So the point of purification is the main thing. So all this thing is, why do we have to do all this cleanliness? That's all fanatic. And if you don't do it, then none of these things are purified. Right? We could also say it's fanatic to wash your dog. No?
He can become purified.
He can become purified. Okay, yeah. With us, that's too much. With the dog, yeah, he needs a bath, right? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The traditional methods of purification of the newborn child are here listed using device of Deepika Alankara, listing many things to make an idea clear. Articles are purified by time, etc. Time purifies roads and ghats. Bath purifies the bodies, right? Because then something impure is there, but with time it becomes purified again. Bath purifies the body. Scrubbing purifies limbs touched by contaminated substance. Samskar purifies birth. Austerity purifies the senses. Sacrifice purifies Brahmins. Charity purifies wealth. Satisfaction purifies mind. And realization of the Lord purifies the soul." Mm-hmm. Right? So the whole idea, since Krishna is the supreme pure, and it's all based on that platform of purity, that all these nice relationships go on, therefore the need for purity is very important. But it's only valuable when it's connected to Krishna, because all these religious processes here, if they're not connected to Krishna, then they'll be purifying and they'll be elevating in the mode of goodness, but they're a waste of time for the soul. So only when you have and realization of the Lord purifies the soul, if that's the central feature, then all these others are supportive of that. Right? Because sometimes we may think that, okay, we only have to do that one, we don't have to do the others. But the point is they're useful in for someone who's doing that. You know, if it's available, if it's possible, you do. Just because one doesn't understand it, one doesn't want to do it, one's lazy, that one shouldn't use that as the reason that, oh, you can't do these things. Okay? That's not proper. Srila Prabhupada adds, these are Shastric injunctions concerning how one can purify everything according to Vedic civilization. Unless purified, anything we use will infect us with contamination. In India, 5,000 years ago, even in the villages such as that of Nanda Maharaj, people knew how to purify things, and thus they enjoyed even material life without a contamination. And these are villages, which we generally consider as not very sophisticated. Right? So they knew all these different things. And so therefore, everything went very, very nice. And in that pure environment, because if the environment's pure, the mind's pure. The mind's pure, then you can be satisfied. If you're satisfied, then it's easier to focus on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In the material world, we possess riches and wealth in many ways, but sometimes not in very honest and pious ways, because that is the nature of accumulating wealth. According to Vedic injunction, therefore, one should purify such wealth by giving cows and gold in charity to the Brahmins. Right? So we can say, because how we get wealth isn't necessarily ideal, then therefore we get charity. Right? A newborn child is also purified by gifts of grain and charity to the Brahmins. In this material world, it is to be understood that we are always living in a contaminated state. We therefore have to purify the duration of our lives, our possession of wealth and ourselves, right? Because we're here in the material world means we're contaminated, right? The impure consciousness means then the subtle body would be impure, because the subtle body is impure means the gross body would be impure. Because that's impure, our environment will be impure. And so everything's impure. So that then the whole idea is to purify all that. And that state makes it much, much easier to. We therefore have to purify the duration of our lives, our possessions of wealth, and ourself. We can purify our duration of life by taking daily bath and cleansing the body inside and outside and accepting the 10 kinds of purificatory processes. Right, so the 10 kinds of purificatory process, that's the samskars. Yes. So then the jata karma is then, one. By austerities, by worship of the Lord, and by distribution of charity, we can purify the possession of wealth. We can purify ourselves by studying the Vedas in order to understand the absolute truth and achieve self-realization. It is therefore stated in the Vedic literature that by birth everyone is born a Shudra, and that by accepting the purificatory process one becomes twice born. That and that by studying the Vedas one becomes a Vipra, which is the preliminary qualification for becoming a Brahmana, and that when one perfectly understands the absolute truth, he is called a Brahmana. And when a Brahmana reaches further perfection, he becomes a Vaishnava, a devotee. So naturally, if we're trying to be a devotee, we should have all this backup. That just makes it easier. Because it's so much easier to be a devotee if one is situated on the proper Brahminical understanding with the Brahminical lifestyle and Brahminical knowledge and culture, and therefore the samskars. Does that make sense? So that will help. That's why it's used. Right? Because technically, get a nice big can. You know, you got yourself a can of big can of tomato paste or something like that, and maybe a stick. You know, you just break it off a tree or pick it up off the ground. Better to do that. Then, you know, basically 4 or 6 bricks, some wood, you can cook. Right? Now, if you have a nice kitchen and paraphernalia and other things like that, it makes it easier. Right? So now, if Prabhupada's saying, the recommendation is to use this nice kitchen, don't sit out in the backyard with your tin can. You know? No, but this is practical. All that's archaic. All this, we're actually talking that foolish. Mm-hmm. People, because of ignorance, can't appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But the Vedic culture is so much superior that it's so efficient in helping in the process of devotional service. But the reason we're attached to these lower things is because of our particular material attachments and identity. And the problem is the Vedic requires a pure identity and pure consciousness. And so working with impure identity and consciousness, therefore we can't appreciate it. Therefore we tend to stick to using inferior methods. Right? But we see it works very well. And then you can say, oh, but they're on the level of prema, they can do that. No. People who are not, they can do that. It's just a matter of purification. Here, the difference is Nandababa is engaging these in Krishna's service, while the other ones are doing it because of the material benefit they get. So the problem comes is our attachment to the material benefit. That's why we think, this what I know will give me the benefit. This what I don't know may not give me the benefit. How do I know? That's why all these stories are here, so we get faith. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
Kind of a silly question. I'm just saying that the most of the things that should be purified, list of everything, matter, senses, mind, soul, but intelligence is not listed.
It mentioned about studying the scriptures.
It's in the commentary of Srila
Prabhupada. Though naturally, because that's the closest thing to the soul.
And self-realization of purify the soul means from the soul.
Yeah, it means the 1/10,000 tip of the hair floating around in the five life airs. That one.
Yeah,
false ego means this subtle body that they're covered by. So you're trying to purify the coverings of the soul. That's what you're trying to do, so that the soul can. So you could say it's no, but devotional service, yes, but devotional service also engages these. So to say devotional service means not following these, but you know, you can understand it, okay, we don't want to follow all these rituals and all that, but I don't follow any rituals. So I don't do anything. I don't have a family, I don't have a house, I don't really have possessions other than a few basic things that I have with me. I stay anywhere, I eat anything that Krishna sends, all I do is just absorb myself in chanting all day. Then, okay, then we say, we chant, we don't care for the rules. That's fine. That person, no one's going to say anything, because that's all they're doing. But if we won't follow the Vedic rules, but we'll follow to the letter, the modern rules that we value, then it's hypocritical. It's totally illogical. You know what I'm saying? And all we'll do is say, oh, I'm being practical. But practical for what? Practical what? Is it practical self-realization? Or is practical economics, justice, and our own materialistic concepts of morality?
It's called the theory of Krishna book, that we're purifying our existence by being taken back, and then ten kinds of samskaras. So it's like one after the other. So the
yeah.
Buddha, they say, yes, we take
bath,
but no, we
yes, no, because taking bath is something we've heard of.
Yes.
Depending on where you're from, then, you know, taking bath once a week is, you know, considered okay. And then if you're a little bit more contemporary than taking maybe a shower, then that you could do every day, because baths take up forever, like, you know, so you do that once a week. Right? You know, unless you want to just sit in the bath with your special, you know, salts and all that, and, you know, relax and everything like that. But otherwise, you know, then a shower you might take, but it's not necessarily everybody does that.
Depends on the climate,
yeah, but we're talking about who sets the standards in the West, those within the, in the, you know, the belt of the tropics, or those north of that. Yeah, so that's what we're saying, is that most of the people live there, they're the smaller group, but they claim that they are the universal culture for the world, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
If we look at it, like, it gives a lot of how everything is purified in offering service to Krishna. If we look at the present situation in the Western, it's more like in the Western countries, they're more focused on purifying the soul, the mind.
Yes, so that's good. They're taking the essence.
They are very much like.
But they do these things anyway. That's just part of the culture. Then, now you're adding Krishna to that. Yeah. But in the West, the point is, Prabhupada's so expert, he gave the essence. He already explained all these things. But the point is the materialistic mentality tends to look at secondary, not primary. So if he puts any emphasis on these in the way of they're the main discussion, then people will take that and miss the whole point of Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness is the primary point anyway, and the bulk of the discussion. The other things are referred to. So if you're intelligent, you catch the reference. And if you're not, you just think Prabhupada's just, you know, talking for tens of thousands of purports. But in reality, he's trying to explain. That's why these things come up. How many times does he mention this point's here? You know, is this the first time we come across it? First time we've come across the mood of Braja Bhakti. But this book, this per particular con points that are made in this purport, we've probably come across them, I don't know, 30, 40 times up to now. If not more. Means altogether, then there'll be just a few times it'll be mentioned. But mentioning one or the other of them, we've probably heard them, you know, so many times. 100 times or more. So what does that mean? Repetition means it's important, but not as important as devotional service. So, because that's in every purport, therefore we catch that one. And whenever Prabhupada says you should follow the Vedic culture, okay. And as soon as he says that, unless it's connected, you know, but without Krishna consciousness, it's a waste of time. See, it's a waste of time. Not without Krishna, it's a waste of time. No, it's a, Prabhupada said it's a waste of time. So we're trying to get past that. So we're seeing here is that all these things are there, but you're trying to come to the point of being a devotee. And then of devotees, then the residents of Braja are the highest. So now that's what we're seeing. Is that?
I hope you can take this line of Prabhupada, which is commentary to the verse itself. People knew how to purify things, and thus they enjoyed even material life without consumption. Does that mean that they actually enjoyed spiritual life within material world? Can you say that? Without contamination of the material
world.
Okay.
The last one.
Yes, you could say material life without contamination means that it's pure on that, but it's ultimately pure because of the devotional service. Means following all these things up to the point of realization of the Lord purifies the soul. All those things will purify the material existence or the scenario they're in. Then adding Krishna to that then purifies it all and brings it to the transcendental platform. They function on that, therefore they're always on the transcendental platform. The point is we can bring ourselves to the same position by, to the best of our ability, applying that. It's not that if you don't apply that, then you can't be Krishna conscious. We're not saying that because that's karma. That's the difficulty. You have the pro-Vedic and the, anti-Vedic, whatever, you know. But the difficulty comes is generally both parties are looking at it from the platform of karma. That this has to be done, or you're not pious, you're degraded, you're this, that. But what about the Krishna conscious use of it? So both are missing the point that it's useful in Krishna consciousness. That's why the two don't get along, and neither of them are really getting anywhere. There's no understanding because the Krishna conscious point of it is being left out. No, but if you're not doing that, how can you be Krishna conscious? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that that has to be understood as Krishna consciousness is independent. But since we're trying to be Krishna conscious and please Krishna, therefore whatever we do is then what is the recommended activities to use as the engagement to express our trying to please Krishna. Is that amazing? So that's all right. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The Brahmanas recited auspicious Vedic hymns, which purified the environment by their vibration. The experts in reciting old histories like the Puranas, the experts in reciting the histories of royal families, and general reciters all chanted, While singers sang and many kinds of musical instruments like bheris and dundubis played in accompaniment. Footnote 38. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, a sutta tells old histories, a magadha praises the family lineage, and the bandi sings praise according to the situation. Right, so these are all different. And that I know of, the suttas, the magadhas, and the bandis are all of mixed varna. Like a sutta is Kshatriya and Brahma, and like this, that I know of, they're all of mixed. And so this way, then they're all engaged because they have that connection to be involved in these things. So then those that take it up, you know, on that level, then are able to function on that level. But then there are the others who don't, and they'll function at the lower levels of that. Like we said, a sutta could be a Brahmin, who generally is the histories, or they could be a Kshatriya, or they could be a chariot driver, or they could be a hunter who snares small animals. Right? You know, like Davy Crockett or something. You know, does that make sense? So, all of those, that those are all just depending upon the range where it's the purity. So the purity is more than, so these would be more purified, so they'll be in that upper position. Vrajapura, the residents of Nanda Maharaj. Right, so the Vedic culture engaged everybody according to their nature. Vrajapura, the residents of Nanda Maharaj, was fully decorated with varieties of festoons and flags. And in different places, gates were made with varieties of flower garlands, pieces of cloth, and mango leaves. The courtyards, the gates near the roads, and everything within the rooms of the houses were perfectly swept and washed with water. The cows, the bulls, and the calves were thoroughly smeared with a mixture of turmeric and oil, mixed with varieties of minerals. Right, so then you get different kind of colors and stuff. You know, like you see the cows, and then they do that, and they're yellow, and then they put the red handprints, and you know, because that's kumkum, and like this. The heads were bedecked with peacock feathers, and they were garlanded and covered with cloth and golden ornaments. So two things: one is that you see all these nice flowers and mango leaves and garlands and all that. So that means there must have been so much. It's not that after the ceremony, when you went out and walked around Vrindavan, there were no leaves on the trees. It means that there's so many trees, so many flower gardens, so many of these things. Right? They're not a waste of time. Right? So all these things are there. Then you have something so nice. Right? And then you have this other thing. Their heads means the cows, were bedecked with peacock feathers. So wearing peacock feathers is a pretty standard thing. Right? So, you know, 20 years ago, the issue over the peacock feather and who can wear a peacock feather is an absolute, total waste of time. The cows wear peacock feathers. You know, so why wouldn't they? And where do they pick them up? Out in the forest. If you've ever been in Vrindavan and Karti, all the peacocks drop their feathers. So wherever you go, there's feathers everywhere. And so your boys, what do? You pick them up, put them on. The point is, Krishna always wears a peacock feather. And then others may wear them. So if Balaram has a peacock feather, it's no big deal, because they wear them. But Krishna always wears one. Radharani sometimes wears them, but Krishna always wears them. Does that make sense? You know, here, the cows wear them. You know? Srila Prabhupada comments. Nanda Maharaj belonged to the Vaishya community, the agriculturist community. How to protect the cows and how rich this community was are explained in these verses. Okay, so this is that point. We can hardly imagine that cows, bulls, and calves could be cared for so nicely and decorated so well with claws and valuable golden ornaments. How happy they were. As described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, during Maharaj Yudhishthira's times, the cows were so happy that they used to muddy the pasturing ground with milk. I mean, we're producing so much that they were always leaking milk from the bags when they go like that. This is Indian civilization. Yet in the same place, India, Bharatvarsha, how much people are suffering by giving up the Vedic way of life, not understanding the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So that's it. You give it up, then you lose everything. you have it, then this is what is there. Like that. Because when you decorate, you take care of the cows, bulls, calves, you decorate them, they actually are happy. Because they can see something's going on and that. And, you know, they know what's happening. Sukadeva Goswami continued. O King Parikit, the cowherd men dressed very opulently with valuable ornaments and garments, such as coats and turbans. Decorated in this way and carrying various presentations in their hands, they approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, it is very important to note in this connection how wealthy the inhabitants of Vrindavan were simply by raising cows. All the cowherd men belonged to the Vaishya community, and their business was to protect the cows and cultivate crops. By their dress and ornaments and by their behavior, it appears that although they were in a small village, they still were very rich in material possessions. They possessed such an abundance of various kinds of milk products that they were throwing butter lavishly on each other's bodies without restriction. Their wealth was in milk, yogurt, clarified butter, and many other milk products. By trading their agricultural products, they were rich in various kinds of jewelry, ornaments, and costly garments. Not only did they possess all these things, but they could give them away in charity, lavishly, as did Nanda Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada adds in his purport to this verse. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and dressed in a niggardly torn cloth. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of present day. Right? So following the culture, then it's there. So it's the same place. So it's not India, it's the Vedic culture. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of present day. The atrocious activities of Ugra Karma, how we are killing the opportunity of human civilization. Okay. So that's the thing. One has these, one follows them, then one will get so much benefit. Because we're thinking it's no, but by the mechanical process, that will give us the thing. No, it's by Krishna's blessing you get all that. You perform the duties you get. Right? The earth produces, everything like that. So it's just she produces. When she wants, she produces more. When she doesn't want, she produces less or not at all. So you see with Prithu Maharaj, they put the grains, they plowed the earth, they put the grains, everything like that. She just swallowed them up. They didn't produce anything. Right? You know, sometimes you hear of crops failed. That's just because she didn't take them. You know, the weather didn't. So whatever it is, the arrangements, the material energy does. Or they can give so much. So that's the whole thing. So they had so much stuff that could be traded for other things. Because everybody else is following. They have an excess in whatever they have. And so this way then you trade. You have grains, they have gold, so you switch. You know what I'm saying? So like that. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The gopi wives of the cowherd men. Right, so the first principle is the faith in it. And understanding how it's Krishna and his control and his laws that make it work. That's actually, from Dharma you get Artha. But we're looking at, no, but how mechanically can we make that work to make profit? The first thing is, what is the Dharma to follow for the Artha to come? That's never discussed. It's only, what's the Artha to get this? We want this, what is talked about. So what is the process of Artha? No, it's Dharma that gets it. Because they're cowherd men. They follow the Dharma. That's why they get it. Does that make sense? Loudly.
Because of Ugra Karma, previously in Bhagavatam it was also mentioned that if there is a particular nakshatra in the sky, and then it rains, then that rain, by being influenced by that star, produces different precious stones and jewels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also why would it rain during that nakshatra?
Yes. Yeah, very good point. Does that make sense? So it means the earth produces all these things with these various arrangements. But these various arrangements, rain is controlled by Indra. Then, you know, you have the proper... it rains.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then to rain at that nakshatra would then mean that it would have to... the piety would have to be there. And so then all these different things are there. Right? Sukadeva Goswami continued. The gopi wives of the cowherd men were very pleased to hear that Mother Jashoda had given birth to a son, and they began to decorate themselves very nicely with proper dresses. Ornaments, black ointment for their eyes, and so on. The lotus-like faces extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kunkuma. The wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Jashoda with presentations in their hands. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. Srila Prabhupada comments. The cowherd men and women in the villages lived a very natural life, and the women developed a natural feminine beauty with full hips and breasts. Because women in modern civilization do not live naturally, their hips and breasts do not develop this natural fullness. Because of artificial living, women have lost their natural beauty, although they claim to be independent and advanced in material civilization. This description of the village women gives a clear example of the contrast between natural life and the artificial life of a condemned society, such as that of Western countries, where topless, bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops and for public advertisements. The word Bali Bihi indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice clothes, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called Bali. Right? So the wealth, that means how much wealth they had that they were wearing in their beauty, and then what they were carrying. So all this is just the natural culture, if that's there. Right? So the interesting thing is people are living in this artificial environment and then trying to be natural. Right? And then what is the natural cost? Yeah, it costs way more. So what does that mean? Then you have to be in the city to enjoy that. So that's the whole difficulty, is that to enjoy all these healthy things, then you have to live a very unhealthy lifestyle to make the money so that you can try to be healthy. That's the fun, right? So yes, so this is the, so probably saying this is the contrast between natural life and artificial life. Right? So it's not that people didn't live in the cities, it's just how they lived in the cities. They had space, they had that. So only people who needed to be in the cities lived there. Everybody else lived, in the villages, in the country. So the cities had plenty of space. Like, maybe haven't seen it. In the examples. You know where the Calcutta Temple is? At Kamak Street? So Kamak Street, when it comes up to the top, the lower circular road, right? Then it bumps into a place. But if you look kind of beyond where it bumps, where the two roads meet, and there's all kinds of billboards and this, and all kinds of shops, all kinds of crazy jazz. If you look behind that, there's huge grounds, decorated grounds. It's not well maintained, but it's there. And a huge house. And so from there to the next street back, Elgin Road, right, which is not that far back, that was one plot of land that one house was on that street. And that street previously, that's all there was on that street, because you can see the next one over, then is where the FRO is. That was the Manipur place. So then that's quite big and all that, and it had a smaller front lawn, but it had a bigger thing in the back. And sometimes you see a big house and you don't see much of it, and in front there's shops or a petrol station and that, because that was their front lawn before. So you can see a few of them still left in Calcutta. But before, that's how the city was. So it was considered the jewel, the jewel of the British Empire. Right? So it was called the City of Palaces, back in that time. So they're huge things. It's just now all that front lawn has been turned into shops and other things like that. But before, that was all open space, gardens, trees. You can still see some of the trees, these 100-year-old trees. Huge, huge trees. Okay. So you know the one place I'm talking about?
No, all malls are.
Huh?
No, all malls.
All malls.
Yeah, yeah. But no, before, I think that's a government building, that one. And so therefore, that's why it's maintained in the next one. Because if it's not a government building, they'll sell it and then they'll make a mall, yes. Yeah, India, they make malls, and America, they make a parking lot. Okay. Yeah, that's why there's more malls in India, because there's no parking lots, right? Sugadeva Goswami continued, right? Why waste land on a parking lot, right? No, there's no space. They'll put it underground. And like that. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. You don't just have open land that's a parking lot.
Now they build a hotel, a seven-story parking.
In the West? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, they're doing that now. Okay.
Nope, space on the ground.
Okay. Sugadeva Goswami continued. Yeah. In the ears of the gopis were brilliantly polished jeweled earrings, and from their necks hung metal lockets. Their hands were decorated with bangles. The dresses were of varied colors, and from their hair, flowers fell into the street like showers. So it means they had so much, because they would use, it's not that they have the big monster, because how do you get showers unless they're small? Right? So they're using all those, like, Bailey, Jewy, all those different kinds of jasmine. But that was standard. They had the putting, now you just kind of see it a little bit in South. It's considered auspicious that they put in their hair some, but a little bit, but before they put so much. And it means that there's so many gopis also. Thus, while going to the house of Maharaj Nanda, the gopis, their earrings, breasts, and garlands moving were brilliantly beautiful, Srila Prabhupada comments. The description of the gopis who were going to the house of Maharaj Nanda to welcome Krishna is especially significant. The gopis were not ordinary women, but expansions of Krishna's pleasure potency, as described in the Brahma Samhita 5:37:29. Ananda chinmayarasa pratibhavita bhis tabirya eva nijarupa taya kalabhi goloka eva nivasatya kilatma bhuto govindamari purusham tamahangajami. Chintamani prakara sadma shukalpa vriksha lakshabriteshu surabir abhipalayantam Lakshmi sahasra satasambrahma sevyamanam govinda mari purusham tamahangajami. Krishna is always worshipped by the gopis wherever he goes. Therefore, Krishna is so vividly described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also described Krishna in this way. Ramya kachit upasana vrajavadhu vardagena Ya Kalpita. All these gopis were going to offer Krishna their presentations because the gopis are eternal associates of the Lord. Now the gopis were more jubilant because of the news of Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan. Right, so all this we see is all this opulence and everything like that. So beauty is also opulence. Mm-hmm. Right? But all this opulence we see Ananda Baba here, then everything's being engaged in Krishna's service. So you see the devotees, they are also the same thing. So all this beauty, all this opulence that is there, this wealth, is all meant for Krishna's satisfaction. Right? So the feminine beauty, then you can see it's appreciated because of it being feminine beauty. Right? But Prabhupada mentioned in the Ugra Karma, artificial life and all that, then here, that you know, where topless, bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops or for public advertising, then it's not about feminine beauty. They're using it, but it's for the sensual and sexual aspect. But just feminine beauty is just women are beautiful. That's just the way it is, right? So then it's just a matter of it's part of the scene, right? You know, the men look, you know, handsome. The women are beautiful. Does that make sense? The kids are cute. You know, like that. That's just how it works. And so it's just part of human society. But because of the degradation of society and about making it for ourselves and then just it becomes lower and lower, then all these things becomes exploited. And so in being exploited, then these things get reduced. Right? You don't have the same, opulence as before. Oops, is that... Yeah. So you can see is all this... Because the energies of the Lord are His opulence, and His energies are His devotees. Therefore, then all this opulence in the form as in with the devotees, that's all just to please Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami continued, offering blessings to the newborn child, Krishna, the wives and daughters of the cowherd men said, may you become the king of Braja and long maintain all its inhabitants. They sprinkled a mixture of turmeric powder, oil, and water upon the birthless Supreme Lord. Right? At the birth of the Lord, they offer to the birthless Supreme Lord, right? And offered their prayers. Now that the all-pervading, unlimited Lord Krishna, the master of the cosmic manifestation, had arrived within the estate of Maharaj Nanda, various types of musical instruments resounded to celebrate the great festival. 12 and 13, Srila Prabhupada comments, whenever Krishna comes, once in a day of Brahma, he comes to the house of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. Krishna is the master of all creation, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Bhagavad Gita 5.29. Therefore, not only in the neighborhood of Nanda Maharaj's estate, but all over the universe, and in all the other universes, musical sounds celebrated the auspicious arrival of the Lord. Because he only comes once in a day of Brahma, and he only comes here. So the whole universe, then appreciating that, then we see that all these musical instruments resounded to create a great festival. Right, so they'll go back and forth between that sweetness there and then also back out so we remember who he is and we don't get too familiar. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Also by doing that, then things don't get too overly ecstatic and he stops speaking because he went into trance or like that. So there's many uses to this technique. Sukadeva Goswami continued. In gladness, the cowherd men enjoyed the great festival by splashing one another's bodies with a mixture of curd, condensed milk, butter, and water. They threw butter on one another and smeared it on one another's bodies, right? You know, nowadays if people get really lively in that, they might have a pillow fight, you know, in good spirit. We're talking about in good spirit. I'm not talking about, you know, the guy there sitting there and with the remote and says something stupid and a plate comes flying across the room. We're not talking about that. You know. Srila Prabhupada comments, but they're throwing butter on one. They got so much butter they can throw it on each other. Right? But they're not. It's not wasting because they're throwing it on each other. And so it's part of the festival. You know, they're not just throwing it anywhere. It's not like in I'm not sure if it's... I can't remember if it was more prominent in secondary or in middle school. You know, the high school or junior high. In the cafeteria, somehow or another, the kids would always take the pat of butter because it comes on a little paper kind of thing that it sits on. And they would try to throw it in such a way to stick it on the ceiling. So most people don't look up, so you don't see it. But if you look up, there's butter all over the ceiling. Yeah. That's not what we're talking about. Yes, because it's there. You know, it goes on the body. It's fun. It's part of the thing. So they have so much. They're not wasting. They're using it in very opulent ways. Does that make sense? You know, like someone taking a bath with milk or these other kinds of things. You know, it's an opulent way to use it. So you'd have to have a great volume. Right, so here, everybody has that volume, so there's not a problem. It's not that, okay, the queen's taking bath like that and nobody else has any milk. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, everybody is jubilant.
Yes, everyone's jubilant. It's all happening. And they're not trying to throw it in each other's face, and yes. So they can't see. Like that. You know, so it's just some fun. Yes. It's like that. You know, it's like the aspect of holy, throwing the colors. It's for fun, not for, you know, just harassing. From this statement, Srila Prabhupada comments, from this statement we can understand that 5,000 years ago, not only was there enough milk, butter, and curd to eat, drink, and cook with, but when there was a festival, it could be thrown about without restriction. There was no limit to how extensively milk, butter, curd, and other such products were used in human society. It was used on all these different occasions. Everyone had an ample stock of milk, and by using it in many varied milk preparations, people would keep good health in natural ways and thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's why you have the thing is that generally it's not so much about selling milk, because you're supposed to be using it. for all these other things. Right? Like that. Like, you notice before it said they would trade the grains. It didn't mention that they would trade the milk. You can, the milk products, but the main thing was the grains, because they used the milk products. But when Nanda Baba would go and pay tax in Mathura, then milk products would be part of it. So it says, because if everybody's paying tax on a regular basis, then the government has so much of these things they can use for whatever it needs to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments. Oh no, look here, Sukadeva Goswami continues. Did we say people could? Yeah, okay. And thus enjoy life in Krishna consciousness. Sukadeva Goswami, because it's about Krishna, therefore they're enjoying the whole interaction that goes on by the festival of Krishna. And Krishna is enjoying that also. Not that the senses aren't being, you know, everyone wears burlap bags and everybody's very sober. Right? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The great-minded Maharaj Nanda gave clothing, ornaments, and cows in charity to the cowherd men in order to please Lord Vishnu, and thus he improved the condition of his own son in all respects. Right, so he's doing all that for the benefit of his son. So that's also the aspect. You do all these samkars, you do all the charities, you do all these different programs, feed the Brahmins, then all the family members get all the benefit. So you can say, oh, this is, why do we have to do this, this is that, it's so much trouble, we can just chant. But then the whole point is are we just chanting? You know, so when we do these, then we're making these arrangements and the whole family gets the benefit. He distributed charity to the suttas, the maghadas, the vandis, and men of all other professions, according to their educational qualifications, and satisfied everyone's desires, right? So he's giving to everyone charity. But it says according to their educational qualifications. So someone who's more scholarly would get a bigger donation than someone who is less. Like that. Everybody is getting so much, but just these others would get more. Right? So you have to be able to discriminate and tell. Not just, oh, you just give everybody the same. Like that. You know, so that's not proper. So how Nanda Baba does, that's the correct way. Srila Prabhupada comments. Although it has become fashionable to speak of Dridra Narayana, the words Vishnur Aradhanar Taya do not mean that all the people satisfied by Nanda Maharaj in this ceremony were Vishnus. They were not Dridra, nor were they Narayan. Rather, they were devotees of Narayan. By their educational qualifications, they would satisfy Narayan. Therefore, satisfying them was an indirect way of satisfying Lord Vishnu, right? So you studied, you use all that knowledge in Krishna's service, then you're pleasing Vishnu, right? And then Nanda Baba then worships those individual personalities, and then in this way indirectly is worshiping Vishnu. Vishnu is pleased because then the devotee who's worshiping him with all this, his qualifications, then is being taken care of. So that makes sense. Therefore, satisfying them was an indirect way of satisfying Lord Vishnu. Madbhakta Puja Bhayadika, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19-21. The Lord says, worshipping my devotees is better than worshipping me directly. The Varnashram system is entirely meant for Vishnu Aradhana, worship of Lord Vishnu. Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Para Puman, Vishnur Aradhyate. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8:58, quoting from Vishnu Purana 3:8-9. The ultimate goal of life is to please Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. The uncivilized man or materialistic person, however, does not know this aim of life. Nate vidhu svartagatim hi Vishnu. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5-31. One's real self-interest lies in satisfying Lord Vishnu. Not satisfying Lord Vishnu, but instead attempting to become happy through material adjustments. By here, artha, mani, naha, is the wrong way for happiness. Because Vishnu is the root of everything. If Vishnu is pleased, everyone is pleased. So that's what you were saying before in the quoting from Vishnu Puran. Varnashram is meant to please, worship Vishnu. That's its purpose. Right? That's why you see the Shris and the Madhvas. They're also Vaikuntha devotees, but they emphasize so much the practice of the Varnashram system. Because they understand its importance. We don't emphasize it, we just practice it. they emphasize it and practice it because it's a very prominent aspect in the Vaikuntha culture. But in the Braj culture, it's there, but it's not the focus. It's just practice. Because you see, Nanda Baba's a Vaishnava. He's calling the Brahmins. They're doing all the ceremonies. Right? He's not saying, well, I'm a devotee too. I can do it. Why do we know? Why all this different thing? The Brahmins are... You know. So that's the whole thing. Is that, you know, Nanda Baba's not trying to save money. So he doesn't mind bringing in a few Brahmins. So that's the whole aspect here, is that Varnashram is meant to please Krishna. So you see here, the residents of Vrindavan are using Varnashram to please Krishna. Just they're not emphasized. It's just something you do. You know, it's just like the difference between someone who's more expert and someone who's then beyond that platform. The master. You know, say the master's cooking, he's going to be pointing out, you know, the technique or this or that or certain things so that you understand and the importance of it and the mentality and like that. So the expert's going to be talking about, yeah, this pan here, you know, I got this here that was very difficult, it's very rare, you know, that comes from this place and only these people use it, and, you know, you get all that kind of jazz. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. The Brajbasis, because they don't talk about it, then we think they don't use it. Of course they use it. What other system are they going to use? Right? Mother Jashoda is going to order out for pizza? You know? Like that?
From Radharani.
From Radharani. The only problem is then, you know, how do you bring it? Because they don't use horses, they only use bullock carts. And then the problem is, and when it gets there, it might be cold. And so then the business, you'll go out of business, because then you'll have to give away all the pizzas. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is all these things have fallen because they're nice. You're going to see throughout that they use it, but the emphasis is not on it. The emphasis is on pleasing Krishna. Therefore, it's used. Its only use is his pleasure of Krishna. Because Vishnu is the root of everything. If Vishnu is pleased, everyone is pleased. In particular, one's children and family members become happy in all respects. Right? You worship Krishna nicely, and it's all about pleasing Krishna, then everybody becomes happy. So if you say, but they're not happy, then maybe you could look at, are you pleasing Krishna? That's another way of looking at it. But that's not practical. Yeah, okay. Nanda Maharaj wanted to see his newborn child happy. That was his purpose, right? So he just wanted to please Krishna. Therefore he arranged this big ceremony. Therefore he wanted to satisfy Lord Vishnu. And to satisfy Lord Vishnu is necessary to satisfy his devotees, such as the learned brahmanas, maganas, and sutras. Thus, in a roundabout way, ultimately it was Lord Vishnu who was to be satisfied. Because even them, they're worshipping the Lord, so you please them, then and that way then the Lord's pleased because of your worshipping those who are pleasing him. Right? So in this way, he just wanted to please Krishna, and so then it was all carried out very nicely. That's the hope. So you can see is even though he's following all the rules, like generally you don't see this kind of description except that really big, big yagyas that big, big kings perform. Like that. You know, like Bharat, Rishabdev, Yudhishthir Maharaj, you know, I say Priyavrata. A few of them describe that this kind of, and even that, they don't talk about, you know, 2 million cows. So you're talking about even the opulence here is greater than the emperor of the world is giving away. Right? But, because it's that's not the point. It's about trying to please Krishna to their best of their ability, and they had this facility, therefore they're doing it. That's where the focus is. So you always see here is that the descriptions of Braja and the activities, they're following the standard culture, but it's only to please Krishna. There isn't another purpose. That's Daiva Varnashram. Right? If we're just worried about the rules, that's Varnashram. But Daiva Varnashram means it's about pleasing Krishna. Like that. So you see it like that. The emphasis is on Krishna and the devotees, not on the Varnashram. Doesn't mean it's not followed, it just means it's about Krishna and the devotees.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanitai Gaura ki.